welcome to this week's episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Marta Dichok for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, bringing you an overview of the top stories of the week, a feature interview with Professor Oleksiy Harany, and of course, a song for you. But first, the news. War in the East. The Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe says that more than 160 people have been killed in fighting in eastern Ukraine since the beginning of the year. Alexander Hug, with the OSCE Special Monitoring Mission to Ukraine, described the situation in eastern Donbas region as unstable and unpredictable. He said heavy weapons must be removed from the front line. During this week alone, a dozen Ukrainian military personnel were wounded and one was killed. On the 9th of August, Kurt Volker, U.S. Special Representative for Ukraine, tweeted, "Russia and its forces routinely block the OSCE Special Monitoring Mission in violation of its commitments. It doesn't want the world to see that it has created a humanitarian, economic, and ecological disaster in the Donbas. It's time for peace for Ukraine." Free Sentsov. Ukrainian political prisoner Oleg Sentsov is now 87 days into a hunger strike in a Russian prison. According to his cousin Natalia Kaplan, he cannot stand and may die soon. She received a letter from him in which he wrote, "The end is close, and that does not mean freedom." On August the 7th, Sentsov's lawyer Dmitry Dzindze told Hromadske TV about his client's poor health after he visited the Siberian prison where Sentsov is being held. According to Dzindze, Sentsov is suffering from heart problems and anemia. The Council of Europe Secretary General personally asked for Sentsov's release. Later, Sentsov's mother wrote to Putin. These appeals remain unanswered. Ukrainian activists have started a flash mob. Write a letter to Putin with a request immediately issue a pardon for Oleg Sentsov. The Ukrainian filmmaker is currently serving a 20-year sentence in Russia for fabricated terrorism charges. He has been on a hunger strike since May the 14th, demanding the release by Russia of all Ukrainian political prisoners. Our listeners will remember we did a feature on Sentsov in June. Poroshenko and Manafort. Paul Manafort, former campaign manager to U.S. President Donald Trump, helped Ukraine's President Poroshenko during the 2014 presidential elections. This was revealed during Manafort's former partner, Rick Gates, cross-examination in court in the United States on August the 7th. According to American TV channel NBC, Gates stated that the last time he and Manafort worked in Ukraine was during the October 2014 parliamentary election for the political party, the opposition bloc, formerly the party of regions that supported Viktor Yushchenko. They also worked with Petro Poroshenko, but were not paid in full. Hromadske previously reported that Manafort had tried to establish a working relationship with Poroshenko. The Ukrainian presidential administration confirmed that they had received such proposals, but denied cooperating with Manafort. Manafort is currently on trial in the U.S. for corruption, money laundering through foreign accounts, tax evasion, and unregistered work for foreign governments. Blockchain voting. Ukraine's Central Election Commission has launched a test voting on blockchain using the NEM protocol. The estimated cost for placing a node for voting in each polling station would be $1,227,000. The test vote is being conducted in partnership with the NEM Foundation's representative in Ukraine. Oleksandr Stelmach, the head of the Central Election Commission of Ukraine, appeared pleased with the ongoing tests. He said that they've created test vote using 28 nodes with the NEM blockchain several weeks ago, adding that voting is still open and anyone can take part in it. Italian mercenaries in eastern Ukraine. Italy arrested six far-right Italians who fought in Ukraine. Prosecutors in the northern Italian city of Genoa ordered the arrest of the six men who were accused of joining pro-Russian militias in Donbas and recruiting others to their cause. The arrests marked the first time that Italian authorities have charged anyone with fighting in Ukraine. Three of the charged men remain at large. The same prosecutors have also charged 15 other people for being part of the recruitment ring. One of the fugitives is Andrea Palmieri, a former leader of the far-right hooligan group Bulldog Luka, who had previously appeared on national TV boasting about fighting in Ukraine. Another is Gabriele Carugati, son of a politician from the far-right League Party, who had publicly praised her son's choice to fight in Ukraine. The League is one of Italy's two current governing parties. What are Ukrainians thinking about during these dog days of summer? I'm Marta Dechok for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and in studio I have with me one of the leading experts on public opinion in Ukraine, a regular guest on our Ukraine Calling show, Professor Oleksiy Harany, who is from the National University of the Kyiv Mohyla Academy, and he's also the research director for the Democratic Initiatives Foundation. Professor Harany, thank you very much for finding the time to speak to us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Your organization, the Democratic Initiatives Foundation, has been doing a lot of public opinion polling over a number of years. So you have a pretty good sense of what Ukrainians are thinking about. What are some of the main issues that keep coming up in all of these reports that you do?
Well, I would start with some general trends. And these trends are confirmed not only by research of our foundation, but also by research of other institutions, including Academic Institute of Sociology of Academy of Sciences of Ukraine. And I will start with general trends and changes in the public opinion of Ukraine, which happened after the year of 2014.
So when the war started.
After the Revolution of Dignity and the war. So, and first of all, regarding changes in identification of the people, because we are doing this check over the years, so we can see the trends.
So you can see the annual sort of changes.
Yes, exactly. So usually we put the question is in such a way, whom do you consider yourself first and foremost? And we have some options. Option number one is citizen of Ukraine. Option number two is regional identity, which means identification with the region or with some local identity, like village or the city. And we have even identification with former Soviet Union. So first of all, I would say that identification with former Soviet Union collapsed.
How about Europe? Do you have a category for European?
Well, we have this. We have also citizen of Europe, citizen of the world. But the dominant now is identification with Ukraine. So citizen of Ukraine is number one identification.
And this is like number one by far? Is it like 51% or 85%? Or, I mean, roughly, is it sort of just over half or is it a significant majority?
Well, actually, it would like 60%, more than 60%. And this is significant majority because we see it that this identification is dominant now throughout the whole Ukraine, so in all the regions, which is very important because, for example, previously in Donbas, number one identification was regional identification.
So before 2014.
Before 2014. And now the plurality would be in favor of considering themselves to be a citizen of Ukraine. So this change is very, very important. If we are talking about some, actually, we have also the question, are you proud to be a Ukrainian citizen? And again, here we have a serious change because most of the people are proud to be citizen of Ukraine. Again, this would be in all the regions. This is very important because now in times of democracy that we have possibility to criticize and to criticize the government, to criticize the president. And we have this criticism in On every channel
Public sphere, pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. And basically, Ukrainians are dissatisfied how things are going in economic sphere, in fighting corruption. There's a lot of dissatisfaction and a lot of criticism. And sometimes we could hear from opposition or we can hear from some channels that, well, everything is lost. Nothing has been changed. In Ukrainian, it's все пропало. Mm-hmm. Or hashtag Зрада або перемога, which means betrayal or victory. So very simplified picture, but
black or white.
It happened. This is betrayal. This is betrayal. Everything is lost. So people are actually dissatisfied with the tempo of the reforms. But when you ask them, are you proud to be a Ukrainian citizen? You see the trend. And the trend, yes, people are proud to be Ukrainian citizen.
I don't know if you have the statistics handy, but can you give us an idea of comparison, let's say 2013, 2000, I don't know, 15, 16? So you're saying that now the majority is saying they're proud, but how many people were proud before the Revolution of Dignity, to just sort of get a sense of how this is changing?
Let me see. I have it. We can compare it, for example, with the year 2002. Okay, because it gives a long period. And actually, the number of those who is proud and the number for whom it's difficult to say would be like 40%. So 40% are proud, 40% are difficult to say, and almost 20% they are saying that, well, no, we are not proud.
That's very interesting, because that's quite high, 40% in 2002. Wow,
yeah,
interesting.
But now the number of those who is proud to be Ukrainian is 65%.
So that's quite a jump.
So this is dramatic increase. And this is despite the fact that you have the satisfaction which we have in the country.
Sorry to interrupt. How many people are dissatisfied? Because you said before 20% were not proud to be Ukrainian. And what is the statistic?
Let me see it again.
Sorry, I keep asking
statistics. Basically, the number of those who is not proud is, say, 18% right now. But the main change is with this difficult to say.
So the
because
undecided.
Because in 2002, it was 40%. You know, people didn't know what to say. And now it dramatically declined up to 20%.
So the undecided have decided.
Yes, correct.
So that's kind of interesting.
Correct. Now we are asking also about emotions. So how people feel, what is the feeling they have right now when they think about the future of Ukraine?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so and it's possible to choose between different categories, emotions like optimism, hope, fear, concern, and some others.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the optimists are not in the first place. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So I will make a reservation from the very beginning, but the number one choice is hope.
Interesting.
Hope. Number two choice would be concern.
Right.
In Ukrainian, it's we have strach and trivoga. Strach is fear.
Fear.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Fear is quite
more
low.
More powerful.
But trivoga, which is difficult to translate, but is something like concern, uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
You have this uncertainty. You do not know. So this is number two choice. So
and again,
you
can you quantify it for us? I mean, number one, is it sort of 50% or 20%?
Hope is more than 45%.
Wow, so almost half the population is hopeful.
45%.
And the concern?
And concern would be 35%.
So again, pretty high, but those are the two dominant.
Yes, these are dominant. And it, I think it reveals the real situation. Because, for example, myself, Have I a hope? Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. I have a hope for my country, and I believe that in future, yes, Ukraine has a future. But at the same time, am I concerned with what's going on in my country? What about my personal life? How my personal life would be affected by the war or by social economic changes? Yes, I have concern about that. So,
do you give people the option of choosing two things? So people can choose hope and concern, or they have to just choose one? Because what you just said is so interesting, because I think a lot of people have mixed feelings.
This is a,
and it's reasonable.
This is a combination, and yes, there is a possibility to choose. So you may have several options. But again, so I would say it's quite contradictory. Mm-hmm.
I would say that's quite rational, because on the one hand, you're hopeful, but you have real reason for concern.
People are dissatisfied in general, but people have concerns, but they still have hope. So this is important. And again, if you have a regional breakdown.
That was going to be my next question. Okay, are people in the areas that are closer to the war? What does that picture look like? Because they must have more concern.
Surprisingly positive. So hope is 43%. Okay. Concern is, let me see here.
Professor Harani is checking his statistics here.
Yeah, I need to have spectacles to see the graphs. Let me see. Just I will increase it.
So hope is still the number one emotion, even in the war area.
Right. And
And concern will still be the second one, presumably, right?
Right. But I will give you exact figure.
Let's not worry about that. I mean, I think it's sort of what you're saying is it's a very similar pattern.
Yes. Concern is 20, more than 20%. And also in the Donbas, fear, it would be 11%.
So that's a little higher than the national average, or that's lower, or about the same?
Well, this would be basically the same. Mm-hmm. Again, we need to understand the results that we have right now are quite positive. So we need to have a reservation here. Because it shows quite optimistic results.
Surprisingly optimistic.
Surprisingly. So maybe it's low, you know, because, you know, when people are answering questions, they have some hesitations. So maybe it's in reality, it's not so high. But, I mean, still there's a trend. But we may analyze, for example, regarding the war, we have also results regarding Donbas and situation in the occupied areas. And here,
sorry, you have data from the occupied areas?
No, it's
or
not
just from the areas that are close to the war zone on the Ukrainian controlled side?
We have possibility to conduct polls only in the Ukrainian controlled Donbas. It's about the war. It's about the situation with the occupied territories, the future. And here, again, we have the general feeling in the country, but specifics in the Donbas, east and south of Ukraine, would be a bit different.
So can you tell us a little bit about the specifics of what you're finding, what kind of questions you're asking, what results?
We are asking, again, traditionally we are asking the question, do you think it's necessary to have a compromise with Russia and the leaders of the self-proclaimed republics? And we have three positions. So one is no, we shouldn't have any compromise, and the peace could be established only by the use of force.
Mm-hmm. That's quite a radical solution.
It's a radical solution. So totally in Ukraine, it's about 17%.
Mm-hmm.
So people who still believe it's possible to have military solution. Then The other choice is we need to have peace at all cost.
So accept the status quo and end the war.
Not only the status quo, but actually accept the proposals which were made by Putin, for example, and which are included somehow in the Minsk agreements, like so-called special status, full amnesty, and so on and so forth. And actually, this is in Ukraine, this is supported by 20%. So again, it's not the whole Ukraine, 20%. So majority in the Ukraine, it's roughly half of the polled. They would say that, yes, we need to have compromises, but not all. So not peace at any cost.
Some compromise.
Some compromises, but not
not all compromises.
So again, and these figures are quite stable. So, but when we have regional breakdown, regional breakdown would be not as, would be quite different. Because, for example,
my guess would be more people would want peace at any cost. Is
yes,
that right?
Yes, correct. In the south and east of the country, because more people like in the east, it would be 27%, and in the south, it would be 33%.
So that's still not anywhere close to a majority. That's still sort of a quarter to a third.
It's not the majority, but actually these people, we need to understand that these people are tired of war and they would like to have peace. We don't care. We don't care about politics. Sure. We don't care about potential...
We don't care who's going to be in charge as long as the war stops.
Yeah, so let's stop the war again. And this is a difference. And again,
Sorry to interrupt. Do you guys do a socioeconomic breakdown? So is it what sorts of people are giving this kind of answer? Do you gather that data?
We have this data. Unfortunately, I don't have it.
Available. So we'll post a link to it on our website so that our listeners can go and read these reports in great detail. The reason I ask is I just wonder what sorts of people are that 25 to 33%.
When we're asking specific questions, you definitely will see a regional difference. Again, it's not so, we cannot say that the country is totally polarized about that, but definitely in the east and south, people are more compromises are more acceptable to them, and this sometimes these compromises are not acceptable for the West and the center of the country. So I do not want here to say that Donbass is or East is thinking the same as the other country. Well, this is not true. So in some cases, yes. In some cases, no. Let me, for example, give you the figure about the attitude towards potential international peacekeepers.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah. This must be recent data.
In Ukraine, you will have majority which is positive about international peacekeeping mission in the east of Ukraine. So in the whole Ukraine, it would be 60%.
That's very low. I'm surprised how low it is. Sorry.
In the west, it would be 80%.
That's still low.
It's high. In the center, it's 70%. In the south, it would be 56%. But in the east, actually, this is divided. And more people are actually negative than positive. So positive are 34% and negative are 40%.
When you say the east, which...
The east, I mean...
The Donbass.
It's Donbass,
so Donetsk,
plus Kharkiv, plus...
Zaporizhia, Dnipro.
Zaporizhia and Dnipropetrovsk region. So this number would be quite. Here you see the difference, right?
That's quite a difference.
And what is my explanation to that? My explanation, it means that because when we are talking about international peacekeepers, it means that somebody in people's minds, that somebody is coming from other countries, maybe from the West. You will have the troops which are on Ukrainian soil. And here you may have the, stereotypes
sort of
from
old
the Soviet
Cold War mentality
from the Soviet Union and all this Cold War rhetoric and the West, which is blamed for everything which is going wrong in the Soviet Union or in the post-Soviet space. So again, in most of the regions you have positive view, but in the East you have divided.
It would be interesting to break that down demographically and see which age categories have which attitudes, because when the young people still have these Cold War views, that's something.
No, basically, we have this, I may rely on what I have in my mind, and we have the social demographic characteristics, for example, in attitude towards the European Union or towards NATO. And here, definitely, you see that the older you are,
so
you are more skeptical.
Right.
And the younger you are, you're more you feeling more inclined to accept both the EU and NATO.
If we have time for one more question. And I wanted to ask you,
civil society?
What is it like conducting research in the war, the area that's close to the front? Because you mentioned in one of your earlier responses that you weren't sure whether the respondents were being overly positive.
Do you
find that because people are in a war zone that they may not be answering questions as honestly as and what do you do with that as researchers?
Frankly speaking, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so because I think that some people, they do not want to reveal, may not want to reveal what they think in reality. So for this purpose, as I am saying, when you have the figures for, in order to avoid it, what you need to increase the sample. Because now what we have is a national sample, right? So you need to increase the sample and you need to have polls which are targeted specifically for the Donbas. And sometimes we have possibility to have it. We did regional polling specifically in the Donbas with larger sample in previous years. We will have it in the fall, actually in September.
Oh, so we'll have to have you back once those results are in.
So we will have fresh results. And moreover, we will have a possibility to conduct focus groups at the checking points where people are crossing the
right at the front line.
Yes. So
that would be very interesting.
So we hope that we will have possibility actually to check the views of those people who are in the occupied areas, but who are traveling to Ukraine and vice versa. Again,
but the question will be, how can you be sure that they're giving you honest answers?
This is
my question to people who conduct polls.
This is still the question, because we have this. But when we are conducting actually focus groups, the difference with the poll is that in focus groups, anyway, you will have the opinions which will go from extremes, from one extreme to another extreme.
Plus people in discussion, they will...
Yes, so you'll have all this view. So you will be able to hear. It's not so... Focus groups, when we're talking about focus groups, it's not so about statistics. So you cannot measure, actually, statistic, who is in favor of this, who is in favor of that, but you have a wide range.
It's more of a qualitative rather than quantitative.
Yes, you have a wide range of opinions, and you may have it, you may compare it with the results of the poll. And again, we will have a regional poll in the Donbas, so in the Ukrainian-controlled Donbas, so we will have more material to think about.
So we will look forward to having you on the show once that results are published so that we can get a clearer view of what's happening, if at all possible. Thank you very, very much for joining us. We've been speaking with Professor Oleksiy Harany of the University of Kyiv-Mohyla Academy and Democratic Initiatives Foundation. I'm Marta Dychuk. Thanks for listening. We haven't played Crimean Tatar music for a while, so we're bringing you some this week. It's a love song called O Kozerlin, although I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this correctly. It's performed by two of the nation's top stars, Jamala and accordion player Shevket Zmorka. For anyone who's in Kyiv this summer, you can catch Mr. Zmorka playing live in the Crimean Tatar restaurant Musafir on Bohdana Khmelnytskyho Street. Enjoy! Join us again next week. We'll be speaking about the anniversary of Ukrainian independence that's coming up. So be sure to tune in, and we'd be happy to receive any feedback from you. Follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @CallingUkraine, or write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskyradio.org. This is Marta Dychok in Kyiv. Thanks for listening.